Hello everyone, and welcome to the most unified podcast in the world, House of Games. Today I'm united with my host Otto, and the unit is simple. We shake hands and turn around and walk into the United House of Games.
Welcome to another episode of House of Games, and this week as well we have no guests, so it's just us for entertainment. Enjoy! So this week, like with the last episode, which will be outdated when you listen to it, this will as well. But now that the dust has settled for the Unity fiasco, I think you could call it, so I thought we could just read through what the like final terms of the Unity pricing model is, and then just go through our thoughts about it, and then we'll take it from there.
See,
we talked about last time that there was a rumor that they would switch to, instead of in an install fee, they would instead just do 4% revenue share. But now that the final verdict is out, so what they have switched to is a 2.5% revenue share if you make more than $1 million in the last 12 months. Or you could do either a 2.5% revenue share, or you could do the install fee that they calculated before, and then you pick either one which is cheaper. And then that's what you pay them. And apparently the number of installs that will be calculated is self-reported. So they will not have like a something installed that would automatically count like pirated copies and stuff like that. So instead they would do it like just trusting you to provide an accurate number. And then you pick either 2.5% revenue share or the amount of people installing the game.
Mm. If you were to do that, which one would you pick?
I think I would just pick the 2.5% just because of the predictability, I think.
Mm. Yeah, likewise. And it sounds like less pain in the ass to look into the install base and how many you've sold and all that.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess, you know, because it's self-reported and that you get to pick either one which is lower, I guess there is like potential for cheating.
Yeah.
I mean, somehow it feels like you could just fix the number somehow, that either you could, you know, not sell everything through a single platform, so you could just obfuscate how many like copies there are and stuff, and feels like very generous of them to do something like that. So not sure if it's gonna last, but I think it's an okay like compromise compared to what they did last time. So I think many people have like said that this is probably some sort of just bargaining tactic, that instead of just presenting this immediately, they would just purposely like present something really like unreliable and something really outrageously expensive, and then they would just say, okay, we're sorry, and then come back with this offer, which is what they intended in the first place, just so people are really content with that instead. But I'm not sure if that is the case. What do you think?
Well, I think I just listened to a podcast where they talked a little bit about this, that, and like, because I never thought about this when I picked Unity as a developer. I just heard that's good for indies, and they have been, you know, flirting with indie devs for, well, since they started, basically. But one thing that I thought about, well, when I heard that podcast, is talked about, like, I mean, basically they want to make more money, because the system they had prior to all of this was also very generous, and like just in hindsight not a good way of making money for them. And I think that if they just had said, we want to make more money because we are, you know, not making enough, and presented this one right now, I think, I feel like people would be fine with it. But maybe I just feel that because we had the stuff that they said just last week, and now this feels so much better than what they said last week. But at the same time, I think that, I mean, even if that was a tactics from the start to sort of drop a bomb and then soften it, it's still a, they still lost a lot of customers, I suppose, who left straight away. But maybe at the same time, they knew that they have a lot of customers who are already, you know, 2-3 years into the development of their games, and they won't leave anyway. And they sort of stuck with them, and now they sort of won them anyway. But who knows, maybe down the line, developers will leave after whatever project they're working on now. They will leave it and go to the next engine because they don't trust them. The whole trust argument, I feel like, whatever. It's just...
Well, yeah. Well, one thing that they also changed with this version of the pricing model is that it's not retroactively applied like the previous one. So if you are doing something like the next LTS version, which is long-time support version of Unity, is when this will apply. So for everything else, the terms of service applies that you agreed to when you start using that software. So if you're using like the same version that you're using now and don't plan to upgrade, then this will not apply to you.
Oh.
But then again, then you won't get bug fixes and like support for better hardware and stuff like that, I guess. But I think something that a couple of people have pointed out related to the trust thing is that, you know, there's nowhere in the new terms of service that says, as I understand it, that they will not be able to, like...
retroactively change stuff again?
Like, there's nothing stopping them from, like, retroactively applying it again like they did before. So, I mean, even though they're saying that... you know, they promise not to, but they haven't put it in a, like, legally binding document. So, you know, this thing that happened could happen again with, you know, in a year if they want to, because there's nothing, like, stopping them. So I think people are really emotional about this thing, I guess, and I imagine that's possible if you have like a company built on Unity and like employees and stuff that you're accountable to, but you know, I don't think I'm, you know, that distrustful, but I think it's just, if I had the company, I would probably switch away from it just to something else, just to at least to be able to be sure that there's no, like, quick changes or anything like that, like there has been.
But here's the twist, though. Well, the twist would be, let's say I have a company with 20 people, I start teaching them, or I tell everyone, okay, we're gonna switch over to Unreal for the next game. So we start, like, 3 at a time. As our current project is reaching the deadlines, or, you know, it's becoming finalized, 2 people every month will swap over to Unity and get familiarize yourself with that for the next project and so on. And now all of a sudden I managed to put all of my staff on Unreal, and now we're making our next project in Unreal. Now, first of all, Unity, even if they retroactively change all this stuff, they could still get me, even though I'm on a different... because the games I've already released, the only way for me to, I guess, get away from that weird thing they mentioned last week where they retroactively charge you for games. They could still do that even if my whole team is now developing games on Unreal. So you're kind of like a hostage situation over at Unity. But at the same time, what if they make a lot of money by doing that, and then Unreal all of a sudden do that too? Like retroactively changing rules and stuff like that. I think the best thing would be to go to open source. If you're going to change, go to open source. Don't jump over to another company, because clearly they have shown that they can just do a rug pull on anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That was exactly what I was going to say next, that would be also my response, that if it's possible, then why not do open source instead and just help that become like the best game engine instead of these, as you say, like hostage-taking companies that sort of... I mean, because you invest so much in it, you're kind of stuck in it. And then if you can just retroactively charge money for something that's released like 10 years ago, feels like you rather want something where nobody owns it. And you can just, you know, you're free, like, you're cut free, like, instantly, that there's nothing, like, holding you back, and maybe in the future somebody will want to, like, extort money from you.
Yeah, I mean, I, like I said last week, I already donated to the GoDot thingy, and I will definitely move over to that next time around, if I keep making games after this one. But it's not because I don't trust Unity, per se, but I guess it is that I don't, because if they were to do this in the future, I don't want to deal with the paperwork. Like last week I got an email from the accountant in Sweden who's looking over the stuff for the company, that it's all done correctly and all that. He found so many mistakes because I did it myself. And I got the email and I could see it. Like, I have a couple of questions, and I was just like this sickening feeling I kept for like 5 days before I opened the email yesterday morning, and I read through it and like, oh fuck. And then luckily I was able to send him documents for pretty much everything that he needed. But just those things, like, ugh, that's enough for me to go, no, I want to go open source. I don't have to deal with any of this. I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to deal with paperwork. I don't want to look at the numbers, like how many copies I sold. That's not interesting at all. I mean, obviously, I want to sell as much as possible. But I don't want to have to retroactively go into some files, and like when I had to log into like PlayStation or Nintendo or Steam, what is it called? Steamworks for Steam, right? Like, oh, all of that is just, well, I hate it, all of it. I don't want to deal with it. So to me, it sounds great to move over to some open source. So I know that I don't owe anyone anything. I have my back is free from all of that. And then also, like I think I mentioned last week, that if I were to quit making games, imagine that. I start plumbing again, and then a game just for some reason sells shitloads, and then I'm standing there doing plumbing, and then I get a call from Unity. Like, oh, no, yeah, almost this much. What's going on? It sounds like a pain in the ass, and I feel like this is, not for me.
Yeah. Well, it's really good to see that the Godot development fund is up to, I think, 50,000 euros at this point.
Nice.
Per month. So that should be, I mean, to me, it feels like that should be a couple of people at least that can work on it full time.
Yeah, for sure.
To improve it. Yeah.
50,000 per month, that's a whole team. Well, not in Sweden, it's one part-time worker. You fucking asshole.
Yeah, well, they maybe they'll have to hire a lot of, I don't know, people from low-income areas, maybe. To just fill up the as many people as possible.
Yeah, but imagine now with the AI tools and all that stuff too, how much they can get done with $50,000 per month. It's insane.
Yeah, hopefully. It would be really cool. And, you know, many people are looking at Blender as sort of the model for what Godot can become, because that's also open source, and that's gone from just like a small project to one of the like industry leading softwares, as I understand it. So hopefully, like, Godot can do something similar, at least where most games can be made with it.
Mm, yeah, I hope so. And I was just thinking about if let's say they start expanding and developing. As far as I can tell, Godot is better for 2D games at this point. But let's say they integrate in more and more 3D stuff. And eventually, one day, it is running as well as Unity or Unreal. And then with the help of, I mean, with this sort of AI era we're in, that means that the whole game engine is built with AI. I'm not saying they're going to use AI all the time while they build the engine, but surely there will be, I mean, they could, what I'm trying to say is the AI and they building the engine is going hand in hand. So when people start using Godot later on to develop games, the AI will know everything about the engine from scratch because it was there from scratch. If, let's say, they were to use some sort of AI tools. So that's a very powerful thing going forward.
Yeah. And I think also, like, because the repository is open source, then hypothetically you could, like, in the future, connect ChatGPT or something to it, to the whole repository, and it knows exactly how the code works and stuff. So then to, like, ask it how to do this, or why is this issue happening? So that's maybe an advantage over closed source software, that learning it might also be easier, just because you can use AI, for example, to make it to tell you exactly how to solve all the issues that you encounter developing games.
It's cool. Like, I feel, I mentioned it already last week, but it just feels like we're moving into a different era in a weird way. A new mindset about open source and all that stuff is better than trusting companies. You know, a lot of people are never trusting companies, but I'm just thinking about what you said, that it sort of reminds me of if everything is open source, that means everyone has access to it. It just means that we're on an equal playing field. And so I want to squeeze in the word truth to it. Like, it just feels true and real, some sort.
Yeah, well, something that is really nice with open source software is just its transparency, that anyone can see. I mean, assuming that you can read the code and everything, but that you can see and verify what actually is going on with it. So something like spywares and tracking your identity and all of that stuff, if there would be anything like that in Godot, you would be able to tell. But for example, in Unity and Unreal, you can really never know for sure if anything like that is going on. Which is also something I think is better.
Yeah. And this, I'm thinking about, like, you said Blender was like the shit now, and it's also open source. Twitter went open source, and that's the shit in a different way. It's just turning crazy right now. But, you know, the argument I've done so many times before, for example, Steamworks, this game on Nintendo Switch that sold better than all other consoles combined, but that's because the Nintendo Switch was new, and every new things, there's always like a lot of stuff happening there at once. And I think maybe, hopefully, Twitter is in that same camp. Like, in Sweden, we have all these regulations on where you can buy alcohol and so on. And I, living here in Japan, we can buy it anywhere you want. And it's just, it's not chaos everywhere. But if you were to do that in Sweden, I guarantee it will be a shitstorm for maybe 6 months. And then people calm down and be like, oh, you know what? I don't have to buy 2 liters of vodka at my local convenience store and get shit-faced on a Monday morning. Like, people will calm down after a while, is what I think would happen if you, for example, allowed anyone to sell alcohol in Sweden. And I think the same thing happened. I have no facts on this, but like when they legalized marijuana in a lot of American states, I can imagine that it was like a shitstorm for a short period of time, and then people just sort of got used to it and calmed down. And I hope that's going to happen with with Twitter, because that's where they're going. What is that? Free speech. What is it called? 100% free speech or whatever. Free speech absolutist or whatever. And now you see what happens when you give people free speech. It's just turning to shit. But I do think even that, I hope that will calm down and become, you know, more normalized, or people you start behaving. And to tie that back into all these engines, I hope that will happen here too. Like, maybe Godot will go bizarre. Like, it will just be a mess for a while. Or, no, that was not my point, but free open source, it's just like, I think Blender, for example, is one of the things that proven that this is, it can work if people just have access to everything. That's how I try to tie it back into all that bullshit I said.
Yeah, but I can imagine, like, the, as you said, the, like, the chaos that must be at Godot HQ.
Mm.
I mean, the development fund going from, I think, like, 20-something thousand euros to 50,000. And you sort of have, like, a lot of eyes on you to have quick progress on the engine, I can imagine. And there's probably a lot of, like, requests and a lot of, like, screaming mouths that just want their feature or something. So I can imagine that, like, continuing on that must be, even though it's nice that you have more resources, it's gotta be stressful and gotta be, like, really hard to know what to do always. I mean, it's a really complicated thing, game engines. Like, there's, it's sort of like a fractal that the more you zoom in, the more, like, detail there is, sort of.
That's a good way of putting it, and I think a lot of things in game developments is like that. Just this dialogue system I've been working on forever, or I go back to and change once in a while. And the more you zoom in, the more you see, like, oh, shit, I need this, and I need this, and it never ends. But true that. So that's the update on Unity. Was there anything else?
Yeah, well, also, they will allow you to, so I think that they will no longer require you to have the Unity splash screen on your game. So you can remove that, like, regardless of which level you are at. But, I don't know, it feels like nice that you get to choose yourself as you're making the game, but it's sort of a weird thing that you sort of want to hide that the game is made in Unity.
Mm, but I heard a good point from another podcast where they said, let's see, when you, if you're a big studio or whatever and you pay to have it removed, you can do that. But for small indie devs, they would never be able to do that.
Yeah.
And this has sort of worked as a marketing tool to make people, you know, play or get into Unity. They play something, they see it's made of in Unity and it's like an indie friendly engine and all that stuff. So I think the marketing must have worked, but they sort of shot themselves in the foot because a lot of indie games you play are shit too. And then made in Unity can all of a sudden feel like, well, this is a shit engine because I played so many garbage games made in Unity. So it's sort of like worked as a good marketing tool in the beginning, and they should have shut that off, like, I don't know, 3 years ago or something like that. Made in Unity, like, you can shut that off, and then when you play a game, you don't know it's made in Unity, but you have heard about Unity, and then you start developing in Unity anyway. So they, I don't know, it's a double-edged sword, that one.
It's sort of like Netflix series, I think. I mean, in the beginning, when something was made originally by Netflix, for example, House of Cards, that was just such, was a lot of love put into that series, and a lot of the early content was really, really good. But nowadays, when I see the Netflix logo on a thumbnail, I preferably just pick something else, because it's usually shit if it's made by Netflix themselves. It's, you know, they put out so much content that it's really hard to, I mean, more often than not, for me at least, it's really bad when it's made by you or by Netflix themselves. So I just, especially like trying to watch animes and stuff, I try to find something that's, I wish they had like a filter button that was not made by Netflix. That would be the best. Because, as you say, I think it's important to be careful about your brand and not just associate it with anything. But I'm not sure how to do with the Unity. I've thought about that with Godot, because there's no mandatory splash screen on that. But I thought about my game, like if I want to have a splash screen or not, and I think I would rather not have a splash screen at all. It would be better just for the user to get right into the game, and then maybe the things you want to display maybe can scroll at the bottom or something. But I always feel it's so annoying as a player to wait for the game to allow me to start playing, even though it's finished loading.
Yes, I agree. When I think when I made Red Colony games, I think we only have one splash screen, if I remember correctly. Or was there some rules about you had to have two? Well, there is the Unity splash screen, but I think I put Shinoden and Runic Codes on the same one. The publisher and my company, and I asked, can I have it on the same one? Because I think that's how it is. Or at least we had a conversation, because I agree with you. I just want to get into the game. It's just annoying to wait for these boring-ass splash screens. And I always thought it would be awesome if you start the game and you're at the start menu, and then you can just have it there, like in the top right corner, made by Runic Codes in Unity, or whatever the information is that you want to...
Yeah. And, you know, because it's fun to watch, I would say, the first time. But when you're, like, it's just another day and you're just booting it up to play it for the, like, 300th time. Like, to see, like, the logo of the engine and stuff, there's nothing new about it. It's just you're waiting for, like, a gatekeeper to allow you in. So at least to have, like, a skip button that you can skip everything.
Mm. Same with the games where you can't skip cutscenes like your brother does all the time. But I think I made an argument that you have to have that you should at least force people to see them once, and then the next time around you can skip it. Because that's something I do in games where you can skip. Like there's a cutscene and then I die, and then I have to go back to the previous checkpoint, and I go back and then I can skip it. Then I skip it because I just saw it. Unless it's a really cool cutscene, maybe I want to see it again.
That's the worst when you have when you have a save point that's just before like a really long like cutscene, and then there's a boss at the end of that, and then if you die like during the boss fight, you have to go back. Maybe sometimes you even have to go to some place to start the cutscene again, watch the whole cutscene, and then do the boss battle, which is maybe 5 minutes. So like in 30 minutes you maybe can try it twice instead of like 10 times.
Sounds like you've been playing Final Fantasy. Is that where this happens, or am I
Yeah. I mean, that was especially at the end of Final Fantasy 3 that I just finished. So that was like the last, I think, 5 or 6 bosses in a row. You couldn't save between those at all.
Yes.
So if you fuck up on one of them, you have to start the whole thing over. So I tried it twice, and then I died on like the last boss fight. And if I had like another 100 HP or something, I would have like completed the whole game, but I didn't. So that's another like 2 hours that I have to redo. So I just said, fuck that. And just watch somebody from YouTube do it instead.
Nice.
Which is just disappointing. I mean, it would be nice if you could like save just before the last fight so you could do that again. Mm. But yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, when we were kids, that was something you couldn't do, obviously. I think with the Final Fantasy VII Remake, the Yuffie DLC, I got that on the Steam Deck. I got stuck as well on a boss fight, and now I haven't touched it in ages. Or did I just find her quite annoying, Yuffie-chan? But anyway, I haven't touched it in a while, and I'm thinking the same, like, oh, should I just sort of YouTube this, and then in preparations for Rebirth, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Oh, I'm so excited about that one. The new trailer was so good. I couldn't watch the whole thing because I was just like in some weird I'm about to cry mode the whole time. It was, oh, it's so cool. So I didn't watch the whole thing. I need to, I don't know, embrace myself a little bit more and then go back and watch that.
So you have the original Final Fantasy and then they made sequels to that one.
Yeah, so Final Fantasy VII, the original one in the PlayStation 1, I played maybe three times as a kid. And last time I played it, maybe as a teenager-ish, I sort of understand everything that was happening story-wise. And then now they're making, well, a remake of the Final Fantasy games. So it's Final Fantasy VII. They have so many remakes, but this is like a, just, it's almost like a reimagination. There's things are different, and that's so fucking cool the way they did it, and it's so ballsy of them to do it.
Right,
touching the maybe one of the most beloved franchise and games.
But it's a remake of the original game, so it's like the same story. And
well, that's the twist. It's it is basically the same. Ah, it's oof! I can't wait for you to play Final Fantasy VII, and then you go back into these games, or not back into, but onwards to these remakes.
I look forward to it. Yeah, I'm at number four now, so just getting started, so I look forward to continuing.
Nice.
So, speaking about that, I have a sort of a rant, if you will, about hype.
Oh.
So, something that I like recently find is so weird is people who hype games like too much. For example, like No Man's Sky was one of these games where I remember when it was about to get released, you know, people said like, oh, you can do anything, but there was no like definition of what exactly can you do in it or what exactly is so exciting about it. I remember there's this specific video, I'll link it in the description, but where there was one like game journalist that said, I don't get the hype of, like, people say it's so amazing because it's an infinite universe and it's infinite possibilities. And then he said something like, well, what exactly are the possibilities? Like, you can go over here and pick stuff up, and then you can go over here and, like, build stuff, and then you can just shoot this thing. And that's, like, in total, maybe 8 possibilities, not infinite. So what is exactly is it? Which, I mean, to me, it turned out that was the case when the game actually released. There's, like, nothing to do. It doesn't matter that you can just go forever in this direction. It doesn't bring you any joy. And, I mean, since then, I've heard that they really, like, updated the game and made it a lot better. But the same thing was with Starfield. I haven't played that yet either. But the whole, like, infinite possibility thing, that it's obviously not infinite, I'm pretty sure of that, but like people get so hyped up about stuff where you don't even know themselves what they are hyped up about. It's sort of like there's this there's a guy on YouTube called Vsauce. He does a lot of like edutainment and stuff, and he did a documentary series, which in it, one of the episodes he did was sort of like he experimented with the thing that if you hear a joke that's completely nonsensical, but everyone around you laughs at it, then you will, like your brain will like edit it so that it says that it's funny, even though you can't like communicate why it's funny. And then they did exactly that, where you have like 15 actors or something, everyone's sitting in a, like a waiting room, and then there's that one real guy who doesn't know that this is a sort of a test, and then one of them like says something completely, like it's just a bunch of words, not even a story, and everyone laughs and the guy laughs too. And then after they interview him about it later, he said, well, it was this really funny joke. And then they ask him to explain it. And he sort of is surprised that he himself can't like explain why it was funny. And that's how it feels with like hype for video games, or some video games at least, like No Man's Sky in particular that people are like everyone excited, so you have to be too, instead of like actually analyzing, is this gonna be fun to play or not?
What kind of person do you think gets hyped about these things? Because you gave two examples now, and No Man's Sky, when I first saw it, I thought it looked awesome, but I never expected that I could do anything. I just thought it looked cool that you can take off from a planet, and the music in that first trailer was so like, wow, this is so cool. And when I played it, it was basically exactly what I thought it would be, like very boring, but just cool that you can take off from a planet and go out in space. And then I went into like a triangle shaped thing in the sky, and I talked to some aliens, and then I got off the spaceship again and landed on another planet. I never figured out how to do, I actually never upgraded my ship to the point where you can sort of travel super fast and super far away. So I just went to two planets and that spaceship in the sky, and I thought that was like awesome. But when I went to the second planet, for example, this takes forever. So it was obviously boring. But I would never expect that it was going to be, that hype you talked about. Because I do remember it was extreme, the hype. But I was also sort of like, how can people think it's going to be like that? I don't understand. So my question now is like, how do you think it's like very young teenagers who have no clue on how games are being made that think these things, and then things just blow out of proportion?
No, I don't think it is, actually. I don't know what it is, but I think it's like the picture I got from it is that it's a lot of, like, I've spoken about this before, but in Sweden there's this book about these personality types where like a blue person is a very analytical person. Like the stereotypical person who works in IT is a blue person, I would say. And that's the sort of person that got really excited about No Man's Sky, for example. And that's people in my own age who are very technical, and some of them even have done game development to some degree. So, but I don't know, I think it's sort of like the sort of figure that you can say like, well, it's gonna be 18 quintissimal billion gazillion planets, so nobody will ever explore them all. And I think that sort of sets a benchmark in their minds that, oh my god, it's that level of video game. So then they imagine like the fun aspect, and like they don't think, my guess at least, is that they don't think that, like, infinite possibilities, they don't take into account that infinite possibilities include, like, say that you have, like, a completely empty planet, and then you have a completely empty planet, and there's one grain of sand on it, and then there's a similar, except there's two grains of sand, and so on. And you could do that with like any amount, and none of that's like interesting or fun to play or explore or anything. And I think they just take into account that everything is gonna be feel handcrafted almost.
Maybe the reason why I didn't get hyped for was in that way. I got hyped for both Starfield and No Man's Sky. I haven't played Starfield yet. I'm gonna wait until, in case my brother comes to visit in Japan, I said we have to buy it and sit next to each other and play it. I don't think you can play with each other, but you know, we just enjoy sitting and playing games in the same room. We don't have to do, it doesn't have to be the same game, but we said let's play the same game. That would be fun just for while you're in Japan. But yeah, I don't know much about Starfield. I just know it's one of my favorite developers behind it. And even though I'm more into fantasy stuff than space stuff, when it comes to games in real life, I prefer space stuff. But nonetheless, it was... My feeling about big games, like big open world games, have always been... Actually, it's a Morrowind game too. Or the first Elder Scrolls, actually. To go from the west to the east takes just as long as it takes to walk across India in the real world. But, you know, it's just an empty-ass game. There's nothing.
And is that real?
I'm pretty sure that's accurate. So, and that game, the first Elder Scrolls game, it has all the continents in one game. And then, for example, Morrowind is in that game as an island. And then, obviously, Morrowind the game is that island. And then Skyrim is another part of that game that you can also visit, if I remember correctly. But anyway, so I've been playing these open world games for quite some time, and I think it's just, it's always the same problem. They're not fun because there's nothing to do in them. But when it comes to, for example, well, Oblivion, Morrowind, and so on, I do find them fun because it's like a fantasy adventure, and it's forest everywhere, and that's what you expect when you're in a forest, not much happening. But then once in a while you do run into like a cave or something. It's like, wow, this is awesome, I found this cave, and you have that sort of sense of that you found something. But then I do think that games like all the Far Cry games and a lot of the new sort of PlayStation open world games with all these marks everywhere, I think that kind of ruins it, the exploration parts of it. For example, Horizon, and Horizon I think is a little bit more now, but you could technically go anywhere, I guess. But anyway, I always had that sort of skepticism towards open world games, that it's just big games and they're empty. Thus, my game Sunset Moon is a mini open world game. It's a very compact game with a lot of things in it. So, and that's sort of how that idea came to be, I suppose. And another great example of a game that I really enjoyed was Deus Ex, the Mankind Divided, was it? On PlayStation 3. It's a very sort of tight area in the beginning, but there's a lot of side quests and you can break into someone's apartment and so on. It's just so good. Very tight, but so much details and story in that small area. And that also inspired me to make this kind of mini open world game. But yeah, I've always been somewhat skeptical to big games because I feel like it's boring because there's nothing there. I mean, just think of an ocean, a big ocean. How fun is that? If you're on a boat and you're looking out over the ocean, it's fun for like 5 minutes and then it's over.
Exactly. I mean, for some reason, I think I could like space games, but like for some reason, people are drawn to like the least fun aspect of space, which is it's fucking empty and there's nothing there. It's just forever nothing. It's just a big fucking vacuum. I mean, I would rather have like a small open world that is like the size of the Resident Evil 1 map or something like that, and it's just a small space station and it's just packed with stuff and characters to talk to and quests and stuff, rather than, I mean, I think in and of itself the idea of having multiple planets is a bad idea, because you're never gonna have, either you're gonna have like a big ass planet that there's nothing on, which makes it useless, or you're gonna have like one city on each planet. So why even have like different planets? Why not have like one planet that is just full of cities to go to? That would be a lot more interesting, because you're never gonna have very much. Yeah.
And when I play games like these, I wonder if you agree or anyone listening. For example, Grand Theft Auto 3, the first island, it's like I know it like the back of my hand. It's just I've been everywhere there, every inch of it. And then you look up the second island, and at that point I think it's only two islands in Grand Theft Auto 3, or is it three? I think it's three, actually. But then you're sort of not sick of the game, but it's not as fun and exciting as it was when you played the first island. And now the third island, I know nothing about it. Like I said, I can't even remember if there were three islands. But the first island, I still remember everything there. And I think that's what you said about having planets, cities on different planets. I feel that that's also a missed opportunity. I would rather have like all cities next to each other. So let's say I walk to the front gates of this city, and then there's like a train to the second city. And then in between, there can be some caves, there can be some lakes or whatever, and then they have another train to the third city. Let's say they just placed in a triangle like that. So then you familiarize yourself with all the cities in a more organic way, instead of just because I assume in Starfield that you live, you can like have a house maybe like you can in the Skyrim games, or at least we pretended that we did. We would kill the person living there and just decorate it and pretend to live there. But if you can do that in Starfield, that then I guess I would pick my city where I want to live, and then I will never visit the other places, or I wouldn't visit them as often as if they were just not right next to me and I could easily just walk over there. But I have heard, however, that there's a lot of fast travel in Starfield, but I think that sort of ruins it for me. I don't like fast travel in when you do it through a menu and then poop, there you are. I prefer the way you fast travel in, for example, Spider-Man on PlayStation, when you actually go to a subway and you can see him go somewhere. For me, that's like neat.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sort of ruins the point a little bit with fast travel to have a big world if you're not gonna be in it anyhow. I mean, to me, it sounds more fun to have like a world that's like the size of a city, say like New York in Spider-Man, for example, and then you actually like you pack that small area, or small in quotation mark, but small area with stuff to do, like they do, for example, in Oblivion or Skyrim, where like one dungeon is not gonna be very similar to the next, or at least there's gonna be a unique quest there, or there's gonna be something new at least in each area, instead of having like these like empty spaces. I mean, people underestimate how big a fucking planet is. It's huge. So there's no reason to go to different planets if you can just have... Like, imagine if No Man's Sky instead would be... The premise would be something like... Like, the game is the size of Earth. Like, that big size. And there's actual stuff on... I mean... And then you maybe have to travel to, maybe not in real time walking, but maybe you can, I don't know, car or airplane or something. But then you have to take yourself from Los Angeles to New York or like those distances. That would be feel like really cool and immersive. And then it doesn't have to be like 4 trillion times bigger than that with just vacuum.
Yeah. And in terms, like, I think about Starfield again, like, for, I think what you said there would be, I guess one of the reasons why you would have planets is you want them to look different for exploration and stuff. But I still think that if you play, for example, Morrowind, if you go to the north, it looks way different than the south. The plantations, the trees, the people, the all that, it looks different. So I still think that you could have everything in one place and just also layer it. You know, you could, instead of having a planet, like I said, I'm talking out of my ass because I haven't played Starfield, but I imagine there might be some planet where there are more water and blue mushrooms. You could still do that. Let's go back to my sort of triangle example here. You have 3 big cities and then you find a cave and then boom, you're underneath all of this with the blue water and the mushrooms. And then maybe you look up in the sky and there could be floating, like a floating city or something, a floating cave up there. It's sort of like having it layered and then keep it compact. I feel like I'm describing the latest Breath of the Wild, which I haven't played, but I do know it's layers, like you can jump and yeah. So, but I think that would work. And I get this image in my head from Zootopia, the Disney movie, when you have these, it's like a big city. It kind of reminds me of a Midgard, the Final Fantasy one, with different sections. But because this is animals living there, you have the cold section for polar bears or whatever, and then the sort of city section for, I don't know, city animals, and then the desert section for those types of animals. And I mean, that looks beautiful. And I imagine that, like Starfield, you squeeze everything together and just, you know, it's all in there. And then you can walk everywhere instead of fast travel through menus. I don't know, it's missed opportunity, but I'm still fairly excited about the game for probably other reasons, like the goofiness that usually comes with these games.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I really look forward to playing it, actually, but I'm gonna bring my bigger computer from Umeå, I think, down to Stockholm then I will be able to play it properly instead of using my potato computer that I have now.
I'm gonna send a computer to Japan from Ume too.
Oh yeah, yeah. How's that going?
Well, mom looked into it. They don't recommend sending computers because I guess the people handling it throw it around like a, I don't know. But I asked her to get a really big box and just put a lot of stuff in it, like soft stuff, so it's sort of like in a vacuum. Because I can't keep working on this computer. It's
packing peanuts.
What's that?
Packing peanuts are these, like, you've probably seen them, but these styrofoam, like, small balls made of styrofoam, which is, yeah. And then you just fill that in with the package so you can, like, pack glass or anything you want and it won't break because all of the packing peanuts will sort of absorb all of shakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, I will recommend that.
Or bubble wrap is also a recommendation.
See, she said she had that, so I hope they managed to send me my baby.
Nice. So how's the game going, by the way? Do you have any updates?
Can't even remember what I talked about last week, but I have been diving into the dialogue system again and streamlined everything. I managed. It's so beautiful, and I feel like I'm becoming better at coding now because I can look at my code and feel like, ooh, that's a sexy code. Look at that. So that's cool. I never felt that before when I looked at my code. I used to feel ashamed and whatever, but now I'm actually very satisfied with how it looks like. And because it's so streamlined now, you can basically marry anyone you want in the game. And I squeezed in this sort of that you can be a man or a woman. And because it's so streamlined, I can even make it super customized to that. So for example, so the last challenge I have is that I want to figure out how I can have like a default name and change that based on what the player name is. So if your player name is Odo, it should swap that default name to Odo when they talk to you. Hey Odo, what are you doing? So that thing is something I really want to figure out. And another thing is that if you, for example, marry, if I actually do this thing where you can marry basically anyone, and this person is not like one of the main girls or main boys, if you play as a woman and want to date the boy, or you can actually be gay at this point. So that's another cool thing because it's so, yeah, streamlined. So you can basically do whatever.
Malleable.
Yes. So now, but at this point, I have sort of four options. So you have the three main girls, because I'm, yeah, later on I will add the boys, but the three main girls, and then I want to have a fourth option, which will just change the name. So let's say you marry someone, and it's one of the main girls, the mayor who is doing the whole marriage ceremony, she will specifically talk about these three main girls, like, because one of them is a daughter, for example. And then she might say, I'm so happy you married my daughter, she is the best, da da da, do you take her? Yes, no, like that. But then the fourth option would be a more like whoever else you marry will be that one. So will you say, I'm so happy for you and Miss Anna that you guys are getting married. So will you swap the name easily like that? So that's the last thing I need to figure out, how to have that name swappable. And then I squeezed in this sort of... if you're a man or a woman, so I can make that some interesting stuff as well. I want to go down this. I sort of figured out that the game sort of take place in the 90s. So I sort of want to explore this whole how people talk back then. So I'm imagining that if you're a man and you marry another man, I want to make the mayor sort of comment something on that. But this is the problem when you make games, that maybe this will be like a problem for the ESRB rating board and all that stuff, because it would be neat if she said something about it, like, so you're marrying Odo, yeah, well, I guess that's all right, like, you know, how people would talk in the 90s, or people wouldn't be so comfortable with people being gay and so on. So I would like to sort of explore that in many cases in the game. Like when you talk to your grandpa, that would be another great opportunity to do something like that.
So just a thought on that. So I know that, I mean, since we're talking about this on a podcast, maybe it's invalid, but I know like for movies and stuff that people have often like squeezed in stuff that wouldn't normally like be allowed by a certain like age rating. For example, like Fight Club, in the Fight Club movie, Tyler Durden has like a shirt with like porn on it, but none of the like ESRBL or whatever it's called for movies noticed that. So it got a, I think, a PG-13 rating, but if they would have noticed, then it would have gotten a much higher like age limit to watch it. And so hypothetically, like if that's one of the options, then if you I'm not condoning lying, but if you would not like say all of the options, like, yeah, well, you can just marry in this game, and then they would have to play that specific scenario to find that out, wouldn't, I mean, how much are they testing the game for content?
Yeah, they don't test them all. As far as I can tell, you have to be honest and tell them all this stuff that is going on. But I don't know how would I phrase, like, it's not the fact that you can marry another man. That's not the problem, I would assume. I would imagine that someone who might read my application think, well, this is a homophobic game. Look what the grandpa said when you married another man. He think it's yucky, for example. But if you put yourself in the ground, and like I always say on this podcast, I don't want to limit myself from what the ESRB or whatever a reviewer would think about the game. It doesn't make me a homophobe because I make a grandpa who might be a homo. You know what I mean? Like, I'm watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine in the background while I'm working, and there's some roses coming out of the closet and all that stuff now. And then the father in that show is sort of like homophobic or very conservative. It doesn't mean that the writers of the show are. It's just like you're making up a character who is something. But, and this is another worrying point for me as a developer, that if you play the game, you might think that I am the homophobe in this case. But no, it's the grandpa in the game. I'm just creating a likable or dislikable character.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's sort of hard to talk about like real issues if you can't like show negative things that occur in real life. I mean, if everything is just dandy all the time, it's hard to talk about or change actual problems, I think.
And another thing I'm thinking about, because there's a lot of games where you can get married. As far as I can tell, so far I've never played a game where they actually have like a negative opinion on your choice of sex, like who you love and so on. So as a developer, it's always fun to do something that no one else have done. So I really want to push this a little bit further and like sort of it would be, and the best case scenario, a beautiful thing would be, for example, let's say you marry the mayor's daughter, and now the mayor's standing there super proud, like, my daughter has got this man and this is great. And then you divorce her. So that's going to be very awkward when you have to go to the ward office and sign the documentation, which you have to do in the game. And the mayor's there again, and like, she will sort of hate on you. Now imagine that you go gay and marry a man, and then the next wedding you're standing there with a man, and she can comment on that. Because that's how the code works now. I could make it like, because all the divorced people, they end up in a list. So I could basically make the mayor say like, oh, can't believe you divorced my daughter for a man, like that. So that would be, it would be so much fun. Yeah. It would be so many opportunities here where you can mix.
Yeah, attention to detail. Yeah, yeah. I love that.
So, and then if you play the game, I don't think you would expect that. I don't think you would expect that the mayor is gonna sort of throw a homophobic comment on you because she's pissed off that you dumped her beautiful daughter for a man. And maybe in worst case scenario, he's also a shanty person, which is the people that everyone hates. So there's so many like cool opportunities to surprise the player. And in the presentation I did in Tokyo, one of the things I said is that I have so many curveballs in the story when you play the game that I don't think you will expect. And this would be one of those things that I don't think anyone would expect happen in a game. Especially in this day and age. Imagine that, like, if someone actually commented on or said something negative about being gay, for example. So these are things that that I want to do, but the code allows me to do it, and I will probably do these things, but we'll see what... I think I have to be honest with it when it's to the ESRB stuff. But if it becomes, like, annoying with the rating stuff, I guess I will do like I did with Red Colony, like have an uncensored version on Steam and then have to censor it for console. So that's always an option. But yeah, I think I'll push on and do it the way I want to, and then you see what happens. But that's my update. The dialogue system is becoming very streamlined. Super streamlined. It's so cool. So how about you, Oro? Have you had time to work on... I was just going to say the space vampire, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Sort of, I mean, it feels like you could make it either a train game or a boat game or a space game, depending on how you want to do it. So, I don't know, maybe there's a sequel in the works somewhere at some point. We'll see. But anyhow, this game, the train game at least... It's coming along. I haven't programmed anything on it since last time. But my brother, who is the more art person, he has done the model for the train and the model for the main character. So we're, you know, slowly but steadily we're getting there, I guess. Fixed some small issues also with... like the project and in the game, one bug. But other than that, not that much. But hopefully soon. I think I'm the pace I'm producing episodes at when I actually get the time to edit is very fast, I think. I think I'm down to something like 4 hours per episode or something instead of like 15 or some crazy amount in the beginning.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
I just called it a space vampire because I haven't seen it, and I just imagine it that you are the camera zoomed out enough so you can see space and you're on a planet with a train.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, well, maybe something like that in the future. You could do a version 2 or something where it's a space station, like low orbit, see? Maybe. Yeah. But it would be fun, though, to do another episode. I just thought in my head, like, what happens if you, with the ESRB people, if you just straight up lie and just cheat to get, like, as a low rating as possible so everyone can play it, and then it turns out, like, months later that actually there's drugs and there's this and that in it. Like, what happens? That it does just get reevaluated, or do you get booted from that system entirely? It would be fun to have sort of a person from that organization on the podcast to like ask them all these weird questions.
That would be fun. Like, as far as I can tell, when you make a patch for your game, it has to go through the ESRB, or at least they need to know. Because I think that has been a problem in the past where you patch in stuff after the fact. So let's say ESRB, they see the game, yada, 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 and then the game is out, day one patch, and then all of a sudden there's a bunch of pornography in the game. And then, but I do think it's big fines. That's one of the punishments. And I also, if either someone said that this or it's true that you get like a warning, and let's say after 3 warnings they won't touch your company again. So then you're basically screwing yourself over long term if you keep cheating. But there's a lot of questions I would like to know.
Yeah, maybe I will reach out to them and see if there's a representative that can answer questions on the podcast. That would be really fun.
Yes.
Like, it would be fun to know like why they exist and like all of that stuff too.
Mm. Yeah. I think my internet is making us talking each other's ear holes here. So should we wrap this up before my internet explodes.
Yes, that's probably a good idea. Well, thank you so much, Rune. It's been a really fun episode. See? And thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week. And please, if anyone hears this, please comment if there's anything, like any guest or anything that you would like to have on the podcast or anyone we should interview.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that'll do it. See you next week.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.